So tonight's talk, the subject of tonight's talk is going to be Only the Body Dies, What Buddhism Says About What Happens After We Die. And a few weeks ago, some of you who are watching, I think more watching then, would have seen listened to a talk by Ajahn Brahmani on the view that we have a soul or a spirit that is eternal. This is called an eternalist view in Buddhism. And it's a view that the Buddha rejected. He rejected it. He called it asasata vada. It's an eternalist view, an idea that there's something indestructible, this core within each of us that goes on forever. And so that's the view that Ajahn Brahmani talked about. I didn't actually listen to the talk, but I'd like to after this, actually. But this evening's talk will be, it's sort of like the other side, the other view that often comes up. There's two basic views that come up. And this is the view that at death, everything finishes. The mind finishes. The consequences of everything we've done during our lives, good, bad, indifferent, have gone. And I didn't plan to talk about this with Ajahn Brahmani or anything, but it came up for me. I think this is quite an important view to look at, to investigate. And the emphasis for tonight will be on investigating it and giving me the Buddha's perspective on this idea that at death everything finishes. He called that view an annihilationist view, or Ucheda Vada, that everything's cut at death. And this was common at the time of the Buddha, which I'll mention in a minute. And the reason that I'm talking about this is I don't usually talk about very philosophical or theoretical things, but I think this view is very, very important, actually, to look at. Because I think it's much more prevalent than I had thought before, actually. When I came to Perth in March from Melbourne, I was talking to one of my brothers and one of my nephews, his son, actually. And we were talking about what happens when you die. And both of them were firmly convinced that when you die, that's it. Finished. Absolutely nothing after that. I really made an impact on me, actually, because being in Buddhist circles, I'm not exposed to people thinking like that. And it occurred to me, well, how do you know that? I didn't say it to them, but I thought, how do you know that? What's the proof for it? Wouldn't it be good to keep an open mind? Because I can see there's very little comfort in that view for most people, actually. Very, very little. A lot of fear, a lot of confronting all their attachments, everything they're going to be parted from in life, all their family, their friends, their loved ones, their possessions, everything, you know, goes. I did also think at the same time, well, of course, they could say the same about me. How do I know that this is the case? But I feel that I have done some investigation, which is the point of this talk, actually, to investigate, to be open. And I was quite amazed that this view, I thought it was reducing, and more people were believing or had an understanding of rebirth or reincarnation. But I think many people, I suspect my brother and my nephew, accept it because it's widely, it's a widely accepted view. They take it on without investigating it. So I think this is something very important to look at. And then only a few weeks ago, out of the blue, came this response from the mind. It was very interesting. It was just without reference, actually, to anything. It seemed like without reference. And it was, only the body dies, only the body dies. And I thought, wow, that's good. That sort of summarizes it for me, actually. And then when I had a look on Google, put in Only the Body Dies. So I thought, well, maybe it's a book title or something like that. And instead of that, what I saw was nearly everything was about an eternal soul or an eternal spirit. And I thought, that's not what Buddhism is about. It's not a Buddhist perspective. So that was what was the background to this talk, what brought it up for me. But one of the themes that I think is so strong in Buddhism, the first thing when you think of Only the Body Dies, is the difference between the body and the mind. And this is so crucial. And everybody knows, without a doubt, that a body has to eventually die. It has a use-by date. And as I often say to people, it'd be convenient if we could find the use-by date. Have a look at it. But we can't. And so the body is something we can't take with us, for sure. That's absolutely sure. And I know one of the monks I know who lives in Sri Lanka, actually, he said to his mother when she was very sick and getting close to death, you know, that he suggested to her, well, you know, you could be reborn, you know, that you could have another life after this. And she said, no, thank you. I've had enough. And this is quite a common feeling for older people. No, I don't want another life, you know. But of course, the Buddha says that even that view will bring us back to another life. So it does remind us what's important. This body is actually only leased or rented accommodation. That's all it is. And it's a vehicle or a container for the mind. And it's good to keep that in perspective because our whole of our lives are really organized around the body, how it looks. And, you know, our homes are for the body, you know, the bedroom, the toilets, the kitchen, everything for the body, and very, very, very little for the mind. So it's wonderful that people will practice meditation, will look at developing the mind, look at developing the heart as well. One of the problems that comes with the identification with the body is that it's the language that makes us think, I am this body, I am dying, I am living. And when you have that, when you use language like that, it becomes quite fear-inspiring. I'm dying, or you're dying. We're all dying, actually. So this is part of it, that language that emphasizes identifying with it. So it's very important for us to put the focus on, often, on what is the long-term investment for us. The short-term investment is the body, and we spend a lot of time on that, making it look good, shaving it, taking it to the toilet, taking it to the gym, taking it for exercise, eating, all these things we do. But the long-term, of course, investment is our minds, developing minds that are beautiful, that are wise, that are free of a lot of the negative aspects of the emotions. And I'd like to quote, I was going to summarize it, but it's such a beautiful quote from Ajahn Chah about the body and the mind. And he said, it's lovely. Now we tend to think these bodies are pretty, delightful, long-lasting and strong. We tend to think that we will never age, get sick or die. We are charmed and fooled by the body, and so we are ignorant of the true refuge within ourselves. The true place of refuge is the mind. The mind is our true refuge. And then he goes on. This hall may be pretty big, even this hall may be pretty big, but it can't be a true refuge. Pigeons take shelter here. Geckos take shelter here. Lizards take shelter here. We may think the hall belongs to us, but it doesn't. We live here together with everything. This is only a temporary shelter. Soon we must leave. People take these shelters for refuge. So this is a lovely quotation, isn't it? You know, that this is a temporary shelter, temporary abiding, this body. And that we often will think that we own it. And when we do, there's quite a bit of suffering, quite a bit of work too. But the Buddha, of course, he emphasizes that the mind is our forerunner of all our experience. And it shapes the world we live in. And when we pass away, when we die, it will travel on with us and change. It will be changing all the time. It's not going to be the same mind, the me, an essential me. So it's really in our interest to develop the mind in this life, to do as much as we can. And the way we develop the mind, of course, is also through it will influence our actions and our speech. So the good qualities we develop in the mind are what we can take with us on this journey to the next life, future lives. And I liken this to a suitcase that we take for a journey. And do we put all the rubbish in the suitcase that we're going to take with us? Or do we put all the things that we need? So the rubbish, of course, all the negative qualities that we may have, and the things that we'll need for the future are these positive qualities. So it's in our interest to develop these positive qualities to take with us into the future life, but also for this life. Because the Buddha often mentions the happiness in the present life of living a moral life, of speaking, acting and thinking in positive ways. So, and when we do this, then we develop happiness in this life. He said this to the Kalamas, actually, because, you know, that if they develop greed, hatred and delusion, does this lead to the happiness and well-being? And they said, no, of course it doesn't, Bundy. And then he said, does developing non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion, does this lead to happiness and well-being? And of course they said, yes, it does. So someone that lives in a moral way will experience happiness in this life, so that's pretty good. But a good point is that they can take that with them when they pass away. At least Buddhists will think this. So views are very, very important. Actually, we have a view, we use this word view in Buddhism a lot, but it's very akin to belief, a very strong belief that this is the way the world is, or a sort of assumption almost. And the extraordinary thing with a lot of these views is they, we don't investigate them. We just accept them. But they have consequences on our lives, the way we live our lives. And they shape our minds as well. And I think having the view that everything finishes at death would really shape a lot of people's minds and tend to bring up negative qualities like fear and worry, anxiety, you know, at parting. Buddha said there are four things that actually bring up fear for us about death. One is our attachment to all that's dear and delightful, the five senses, whether it be people, whether it be our possessions, the food, all the things that we're attached to. Attachment to the body, and also the feeling that we may not have done enough good things in our lives. We may have done things that harmed ourselves or others. And the last one you said that can give rise to fear, at least for a Buddhist, is that they feel like they haven't understood the teachings. And so they've got this doubt, so this is a fear for them. But it's very important to look at beliefs and to see that beliefs that come from just having faith in them is different from what we know from experience. And so it's good to differentiate between what we know and what we believe. faith, as it was, as it were, so that we're more open and we know what's what. And I liked one of the sayings that I liked from Aya Kema too. Another one was, she talked about the quotation, famous quote, faith can move mountains. I think most people know that one. Faith can move mountains. But she said, but if it's blind faith, being blind, it doesn't know where to move them. And that's very true. So Buddhism emphasizes balancing this sort of faith, or we sometimes call it confidence or conviction, with wisdom. It's never a blind one. So, as I mentioned, what are the most common views about what happens after death? And of course, what it becomes very obvious when you read the Buddha's teachings is that nothing is new. It was the same at the Buddha's time, actually. And, but there's a very, very nice teaching, very deep teaching by the Buddha called the Kacchana Gotha Sutta in the Connected Discourses of the Buddha. These are the thematic teachings of the Buddha, where he gives a really interesting teaching in about the different types of beliefs and the position that the Buddha came to understand from direct experience. This is the Kacchana Gotha Sutta. And the Buddha said, this world, Kacchana, for the most part, depends upon a duality, upon the notion of existence and the notion of non-existence. And this is particularly existence after death and non-existence after death. So, and of course this boils down to the basic two views that I actually alluded to at the beginning, that there is a soul or a spirit that is eternal. There's some eternal aspect, something, some core to our being. Interestingly enough, this evening I was visiting somebody who's dying in hospital and I heard one of the medical staff saying, I don't have a soul. Very interesting. So, but I don't think that's, anyway, that was. So, this idea is that this doesn't die, this is eternal when the body passes away. And the other view, of course, is that life ends completely when we die. And this is this very much this materialist idea, body and the mind are products, byproducts, or products of matter, this materialist view. And then when we die, body dies, mind has to go with it. But what does the Buddha say about these two views? He emphasizes, of course, most Buddhists will know this, that right view. He teaches the Noble Eightfold Path, and I'm sure many people watching this will know that. Right view, right intention or right motivation, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right stillness or stillness, unification of mind. So for the Buddha, what the Buddha was teaching, this right view is really interesting. It's not something that the Buddha believed in or thought up. This is something that he experienced from his direct understanding of the world. And so right view, part of that right view part of that right view as it is that is there is this life and the other life. So there is in the present life, and there will be future lives. And it was a consequence of his enlightenment that he saw this directly from his own experience. It wasn't something that he made up, that he thought up, that he worked out, figured out. But he went on in this sutta that I mentioned, the Kacchana Gotha Sutta. If people are interested, it's a very, very deep sutta. It's really interesting. Sutta, interesting teaching from Buddha. And he said in this sutta that he taught the middle way between these extremes, the middle way between the idea that there's this eternal soul or spirit, or in Hinduism, they say Atman, that exists after death and will continue forever. That view, and the other view, that at death, life ceases totally, completely. And there's this nice quote from him that puts that, and explains his the Buddha's point of view. He said, "All exists, Gacchana, this is one extreme. All does not exist. This is the second extreme." This is particularly after death. Without veering towards either of these extremes, the Tathagata, this is Buddha, teaches the Dhamma by the middle. And then he gives the teaching on the dependent origination, with starting with ignorance, that it conditions our willed activities. That's one of the translations, which affects willed activities are our positive and negative actions of body, speech and mind, giving rise, shaping our consciousness, giving rise to the body and mental characteristics we have, giving rise to our six senses, the mind and the five usual senses, giving rise to contact, giving rise to feeling, giving rise to desire or craving, giving rise to clinging, giving rise to existence, giving rise to birth, rebirth, giving rise to old age, sickness and death, giving rise to sorrow, lamentation, pain and grief and despair. And then he does the reverse. So from the cessation of ignorance, understanding how things are, all these things can finish. So what does this mean? So it means that at death isn't the end of life, because rebirth happens with the dependent origination that I just mentioned. It goes up to rebirth and starts all over again and keeps cycling. But the Buddha said life isn't eternal either, because rebirth can cease, will cease at full awakening. When somebody becomes fully enlightened, when ignorance is gone, that whole sequence falls, collapses like cards will collapse. And that person will know that the birth is finished. There will be no more coming to any existence. So this is what the Buddha saw. But this is only for an awakened being, only for someone who is fully enlightened. And it made me remember one of Ajahn Brahm's stories. I think it's from Opening the Door of Your Heart. And he doesn't mention it very much now, but there was some very trendy desk toy that you press the button and a little arm came out. And the arm came around and then turned the button off. And he said this was like the purpose of developing the path, understanding the conditions of the being reborn again and again, and then turning the button off. So this is something that is a nice image for it. I know one of the monks, his auntie actually, said that when she dies, she expects that everything will completely end. And he reflected, I don't think he told her, well, it's not that easy actually. To actually, for everything to end, you have to understand a lot. And the mind has to be completely pure, of greed, hatred and delusion, and there has to be the wisdom that this is enough. This will always be of this nature. And a very important aspect of this, talking about this process, is that the Buddha talks about how the process unfolds in life, how it works. And there are three aspects to it that I think many Buddhists will know. The reason we're reborn, we want to. We want to be reborn. That's it. And why do we want to be reborn? Buddha said there are three reasons actually for that. He said that there is, because of our attachment to all that's dear and delightful, our possessions, our friends, our loved ones. It's the five senses, basically, our attachment to that. And also, there's even a deeper attachment. I sometimes call it the survival instinct. And this is this deep-rooted desire to exist. And it's very interesting, if you ever find yourself in a life-threatening situation, it's amazing how quick one can react without even thinking. And this is that very deep instinct, survival instinct. And the last one, this is the interesting one that I mentioned before, the Buddha calls it vibhava tanha. This is the desire to finish everything, there to be nothing after this life. Isn't it interesting? Buddha said, this will bring us back to life, bring us back to another existence. Because it's coming from the sense of self. It's not coming from purity. It's not coming from freedom, from negativity. Very important is karma, you know, our actions of body, speech and mind from our life and from past lives. And this will determine where we're reborn, because those actions of body, speech and mind will develop the mind, in, as it were, give the mind a certain quality. And when we're reborn, we will tend to go to an existence that matches the sorts of mind states that we've developed. And the last, the third aspect that the Buddha said we need for rebirth is consciousness. And he gives a lovely simile of a field. He said the field is karma. He said the seed is our consciousness, and the moisture is the wanting, the desire. This is the moisture that makes rebirth happen. And it's important, as you saw from dependent origination, you realize it's a condition process. And the reason for this dependent origination that I mentioned is that it shows that we don't need a soul or a self to drive the process. It's a condition process. This is really the heart of Buddha's teaching. But what does the Buddha advise us? What basis did the Buddha teach this? Well, as I mentioned, on the night of enlightenment, it was from his own direct experience, and when he saw his past lives, he saw that was the first knowledge. The second one was that he saw how beings pass on according to their actions. So they pass on from one life to the next, according to what they have done, said, and what they have thought. And the third knowledge that he developed was he destroyed the negative roots in the mind, the asavas, and penetrated the wisdom of the Four Noble Truths. This is his awakening. So this is the basis for the Buddha's teaching. It wasn't a belief, it was a direct experience for him. So it's very... And more importantly, what does the Buddha, given this scenario of rebirth, again and again, what did he advise? The only reason the Buddha exists is out of compassion for the happiness and well-being of all beings, not just Buddhists, all beings. And his emphasis, this teaching, one of the major things is the emphasis on making good karma. This is merit, we call it punya. And he talks about the 10 wholesome and 10 unwholesome actions of body, speech and mind. And how important this is for driving the process of rebirth. And they are, of course, you know, not, there's a positive aspect to it, and there's a negative aspect to it as well, like not killing living beings, abstaining from it, but instead having compassion for them. not taking things that are not given, this is stealing, but rather giving, being generous, not abstaining from sexual misconduct, and instead developing fidelity, reliability in our relationships, and not lying, and instead developing truth, not having harsh speech, this is having gentle speech instead, not having speech that divides, sets people against other people, having speech that brings harmony, brings people together, and lastly, not gossiping, talking about what is actually fact, what is useful in our lives and other people's lives. And then the last three are the mental aspects. So we had three of the body, not killing, not stealing, not sexual misconduct, and then speech, not lying, not harsh speech, not divisive speech, and not gossiping. The last three are, first of all, not having these incredible strong desires for other people's properties. They use the word covetousness in English, but it's not a common word, really. And then not having this anger, this negativity in the mind, developing positive states of mind. And last, not having a wrong view, having a right view. So he's emphasizing how important it is that view will tend to take us in a particular direction, will also shape the sorts of emotions that we experience. And particularly the Buddha is emphasizing three aspects for this, you can abbreviate in a sense, is giving, you know, this moral conduct we're talking about, and also developing the mind, bhavana, developing the mind in good qualities, reducing the negative. And one of the fascinating things with when he talks about the ten causes of wholesome, unwholesome action, he says, the Buddha says, that if we develop good moral conduct of body, speech and mind, like I was talking about, those ten actions, the negative and the positive, we can determine our next rebirth. We can, by keeping it in mind, and having this moral basis foundation to it. So this is a very, you know, really a positive thing. We can see what we can do. But I'd like to just end with a short reflection on investigation, because I think this is one of the aspects of this talk, is really to emphasize investigating. And this is for Buddhists as well, to investigate. And I liken this to, if we're going on holiday, wouldn't most people investigate or check up about where they're going, what they need to take with them? I would think, you know, just you know, what I need to wear, or, you know, why am I going there, first of all? But I say to people, isn't death the biggest journey we're going to take in this life? And there's a lovely teaching, I was going to summarise at the end, but it's from the Dhammapada. And it's somewhat chilling in a way, but it's also got the second verse is quite positive, actually. And the Buddha says, this the Dhammapada is the verses, some of the verses of the Buddha. He says, like a withered leaf are you now. Death messengers await you. You stand on the eve of your departure. Yet you have made no provision for your journey. And then the next one. Make an island unto yourself. Strive hard and become wise. Rid of impurities and cleansed of stain. You shall not come again to birth and decay. Isn't that lovely? That's really nice. Withered leaves. I sometimes feel like that. So that's good. So this gives us an idea of this journey from life to death. And I actually often refer to death as the big send-off, the big send-off from one life to the next life. And I think this is a good way of looking at it. It certainly reduces the sadness that people feel at parting from those that they're attached to, the things that they're attached to, because it emphasises that, quite possibly, we may meet again, as Vera Lynn used to sing in the Second World War, because where are we going to want to be reborn? Wherever our attachments are, wherever our heart is, that's where we want to take rebirth. And provided we have a good karma, we can do it. We can do it. Buddha said that. So I'd just like to get fairly close to the end to in what areas can we investigate if there is something after death? Because this is really important to investigate. And one of the areas that is very people know about quite a bit now is near-death experiences. I think people have heard about it. There's more studies about that now. And also on YouTube you can see quite a few videos. They look very interesting. I haven't looked at enough of those, actually. And I know there was one member of the Buddhist Society who had an experience with this. When they were on a tour, like we'll call it a pilgrimage, to Myanmar or Burma. And this person, he became very, very, very sick. And they were taking him in the back of a vehicle, I think to a doctor. And he had vomiting and diarrhea and was really, really, really sick. And he could feel the mind going within itself, was withdrawing from this very painful body and experience. When he was going inside, going towards the light, going towards warmth, going towards comfort, going away from all this pain, he heard this voice, like in the distance, shouting. Well, you should be shouting. It was the tour guide. Come back! Come back! And he did. He did come back. He was a bit angry about it. As most people are when they have a near-death experience. But he came back due to that woman, you know, calling him back, you know, which was amazing. So near-death experience is something you can look into and make up your mind. That's a great thing with YouTube, I think. I say, don't argue with people about rebirth or reincarnation. The difference between rebirth and reincarnation, rebirth is more of a Buddhist concept that there is this future lives, but this process can end. Reincarnation usually has the idea that this process ends in unification with Atman, with the universal energy. So it's a bit different. So that's one area you can investigate. The other is, of course, if you look on YouTube or you can look at reincarnation. There's lots of videos and they're very, very compelling. Some of them, I think, we can make up our own mind. And also investigate with Dr. Ian Stevenson. People will know about him, Professor Ian Stevenson. He did a lot of very thorough scientific investigation. One of my favourite books was Francis Story's book on called Rebirth in Doctrine and Experience. A very nice book. And this is where Dennis comes in. Past life regression is another possibility too. Because when people have hypnotized, they can sometimes, some people remember past lives. And I remember many years ago there was a TV program that did this very, very thing. It's on YouTube, I'm sure. And it's Australian, I think, TV program, where they hypnotised six people. These were the six that had very strong memories of past lives. And then they actually took them to the places they remembered. And it was really amazing to see their reactions, so emotional, when they went to these places that they had lived in past lives. And I remember one of them was a man who was studying to be a doctor in Scotland, I think in the 1800s, something like that. And he went to the college he was studying in, I think in Edinburgh, and he was looking at a really old place. He was looking around and said, oh, there used to be a door here. I'm sure there was a door here. And he went around the building and they said, no, that wasn't there then. And they looked at the old plans. And sure enough, there was a door there before that they had bricked up. And there were the changes that he mentioned. But some of them were very, very moving, you know, especially there was one of a little girl who, a Jewish girl, that the family were keeping hidden in a cellar in their home. And her experience of actually going mad, just being on her own, was really sad, actually. But it was very compelling. And of course, the last, there's probably other ways of doing it, is through meditation. We can remember our past lives. Some meditators, in fact, do remember their past lives. And as I mentioned, the Buddha remembered his past lives. Not all of them, but he mentioned that he recalled many eons of world contraction and expansion. And that must be billions and billions of years, actually. And the detail that he mentions is interesting. He says he remembered his name, his clan, which is sort of like his social position, his appearance, his food, his experience of happiness and pain, his lifespan, and his passing away. So that's pretty detailed, actually. So those are some areas we can look in. So near-death experiences, reincarnation, or rebirth, past life regression and meditation. So I hope that encourages us to investigate more, to come to understand more about this really important area that is shaping our lives, that will lead to happiness and well-being. And to end off, I would like to dedicate the merit to the people that I mentioned, to all those members of the Buddhist Society, those Dhamma friends who passed away, and I mentioned some names at the beginning. So I will just... He's offering the question. Two, is it? All right. Maybe just two, and then I'll do this. Just a bit of chanting. Thank you. That's it. From Switzerland. How can we use the deception of death to be more diligent and hardworking in life and meditation practice without coming from a sense of self or will? Right. That's very important because if we're coming from a sense of will or self, that will be that will actually probably bring up a lot of fear. So the perception of death is a very useful one because we realise that life is not going to be going on forever. We realise it's finite. And so we can put more care into what we're doing and we can focus on the fact we don't know when that will happen. We don't know how it will happen. But we can be sure of one thing. It will happen. So any way we can perceive that brings up the sense of, yes, this is a reality. You know, most people, as Ajahn Chah mentions, don't really have the idea that this body is going to die. So any way that we can bring that perception up in a very meaningful way, in a way that brings feelings up for us, that's the way that we can develop the perception of death. But if it leads to people feeling depressed, this is not useful. If it leads to understanding, to wisdom, to seeing life differently, to realizing that now is the time we can contribute, we can do something positive. Now is the time that life is precious, not to waste it. So there are just a few points on the perception of death. It's a very useful one because when we perceive death, when we have the perception of death, it's a very, very good way to see impermanence, to see the fact that everything changes, everything is transitory, will pass away. And the next question, is it okay to say that our thoughts that we experience when we meditate is one of the reasons for our reincarnation? Well, it's not only the thoughts we experience when we meditate, it's the thoughts we have during the day and throughout our life. They are the thoughts that shape our lives, actually. They shape who we are, how we act, how we speak. So, these thoughts very much influence our rebirth or reincarnation. And very important for us to understand thinking and to develop these positive qualities that will take us, will develop. When we develop positive qualities, it also influences the way we think. So I hope that sort of answers your question. All right. Now we can just dedicate the merit, as I mentioned. This is some Pali chants. Samvatam chamhe, samvatam punya sampadam, samve deva anumodantu, samvatam bhati sindhya, samve bhuta anumodantu, samvatam bhati sindhya, samve santa anumodantu, samvatam bhati sindhya. Akasantan chalumata, devanaga mahindika, ponyantam anumoditva, shiram rakam tu sasanam, shiram rakam tu desanam, shiram rakam tu mangparanti, idam meya dinam hotu, sukita honte ratayo, idam meya dinam hotu, sukita honte ratayo, idam meya dinam hotu, sukita honte ratayo. That means, this is for my relatives, may they be happy. And lastly, may you abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from your will, in freedom from anxiety, and may you maintain well-being in yourselves. And now, for those who'd like to, we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha to finish off.